Okay, Disney princesses or walking, talking animals? It's the magical world of Disney.
Yes, but we're talking classic Disney from everything like Snow White all the way through to their last proper animated movie before they went CGI with Mulan. We are taking a walk down memory lane with classic Disney animation right now on Movie Mount Rushmore.
Hey, screeners, how you doing? It's me, the one AJ, Anthony Jordan.
And me, Nico Lero, and we are here to talk about movies, animation movies, classic animation movies. This is going to be fun, AJ.
The wonderful, magical world of Disney. This is going to be a fun one. This is going to be a fun one. So many to pick from. And guys, when we say classic, it's because you can't be in a Pixar-esque type of animation. You could be later than Pixar, but you have to be actual hand-drawn animation is what we're looking for in this. So it's going to
No
be a fun
computer
one.
animation.
That's the one.
You may have some influences of computer animation within the movie, but the overall movie must still be hand drawn.
Indeed. So that's the one. Okay, so before we get into it, would you like to tell everyone how the movie Mount Rushmore works?
Yes, basically it's a top 10 show between two best friends from school. Here's how the show works. AJ and I get us on the topic, we go our separate ways, and we come right back here into the podcast, into our video, where whether you're watching us on YouTube, on our channel, The Silver Screen Dudes, please like and subscribe if you haven't already, or whether you are listening to us on one of our many, many podcast platforms, we come back and we deliver to you The Silver Screen Dudes, our film Familia, our beloved film family, our individual top tens. This week, AJ will go first, delivering his bottom three. I will then deliver my bottom three. AJ will deliver his next two. I will then deliver my next two. And then when we get to our top five, we will trade one apiece. And if at any time while we are rounding off our individual top 10 list, one person has a movie in a higher position, that person will say,
Hunt.
and we will punt and talk about that movie when we get to the higher position. Once we have both rounded off our individual top 10 movies, we will create, in the voice of Chandler Bing, the movie Mount Rushmore. These are the four quintessential diverse must-see movies of the genre, which this week is.
Top 10 classic Disney animated movies. Now, guys, last week our topic was, in fact, I will let Nico say it because let me do it the correct way. I was going to change it up, but we're going to go the classic way. And the classic way is, after we, the Silver Screen Dudes, give you the top four movies, it gets even harder because it goes over to you, the screeners, who have to vote for El Capitan, El Numero Uno, the King of Kings, the best of the best of the best, sir, with honors. And in the words of Highlander, in the end, there can be only one. But is that because you have to crown the ultimate must-see of that genre? Last week, our topic was.
Last week, our topic was the top movies that every cinephile must watch.
And the contenders were.
The contenders were, to a lot of people's chagrin, which I couldn't get my head around, I was like, behave. But a lot of people didn't like this first choice. But it was Jurassic Park, 12 Angry Men, Singing in the Rain, and Seven Samurai.
Okay. So just based on what people said, which I think is kind of disgusting, but Jurassic Park obviously came fourth.
No. It was just the few odd comments that were saying that it doesn't belong on this list because, and I was like, how? And
One of
it
the
seemed to
greatest of
boil
all
down
time.
to age. It boiled down to the fact that it's only 30 years old, whereas the other three are substantially older. I'm like, but age shouldn't have a bearing on whether something is must watch or not.
That is so sad. That is really sad. Because what defines a classic? If it's still in the conversation 30 years on, people, I would like to think it falls in classic category.
But it was from beloved fans. It was from people like Mixed Memorabilia and Andy Hart and Pedro SRN. I was like, really? You guys? How are you dissing Jurassic Park?
The
Someone, I can't
question
remember
remains.
who even went as far as to say, I think it might have been JT at We Love Movies. It was like, I wouldn't even put Jurassic Park in my top 10 Spielberg movies. I was like, yeah, what is going on?
So here's a question, and I'm very intrigued because maybe some of these people would have said maybe something like The Godfather as an all-time classic, right? And bear with me on this question, and I don't want to deviate on time. Now, when we were young, and I'm guessing we're all within the 1980s baby faction here. The Godfather was released in 1970 something. And by the time 1993 had come out when Jurassic Park was out, the whole world deemed it a classic. And that was about a 20-year gap. Jurassic Park being 30 years still doesn't get to be classified as a classic. Please explain.
It's silly, you know. The argument I did, which you know, I'm sure there was an answer to it, but I kind of stopped at that point because I was like, okay, clearly we've just got differing opinions and we're not going to find a meeting point here. But it's like, I believe when the silver screen dudes are all dead and buried or cremated or whatever, you know, we're not here anymore. In 100 years' time, the next generation of film familia, people are going to be looking back at Jurassic Park and go, that was a life-altering, seminal, history-defining moment in cinema. You know, the fact that people like Louis, who's been on the show in the past before, you know, Gen Zers have not seen Jurassic Park. There are two generations of people already who have not seen Jurassic Park and who will still experience it and go, whoa, must watch. I didn't get it. For me, the argument that it shouldn't be on this list, I was like, you're crazy. Absolutely crazy.
It's still weird. I'm going to stick with Jurassic Park as number four just because I'm thrown. Do I agree with it? No, but I'm going to go with it because
It's not.
beloved followers. Okay, screw it. Singing in the Rain.
No.
This is going to be one of those where I completely get it wrong each round. Seven Samurai.
Yeah. Shockingly, Seven Samurai came in last with 15%. It's tough,
Okay,
isn't
this
it?
is weird. This is weird. Third place, 12 Angry Men.
No.
Singing in the Rain.
Yeah. Singing in the Rain came in third with 18%.
This is a really tough week. I don't know which way people are swaying.
Super tough.
Because I think it has won before, I'm going to go with this. And if not, it's just going to completely spin the axis. Jurassic Park at number two.
No. 12 Angry Men. 12 Angry Men came in at two with 28%, and Jurassic Park actually stormed it with 39%. So there's enough people out there who, listen, I don't think Jurassic Park is necessarily worthy of winning this, but I'll tell you what, I would listen to an argument for anyone who would want to raise with me Jurassic Park is the most must-watch movie of all time. I'd listen to it. I don't know if I'd agree with it, but I would certainly listen to that argument. 100%.
In a former life, I would have been very open to a discussion of as to why people don't believe what qualifies as a classic. Look out for a silver screen special on
But
that
that
then.
wasn't even the topic. That's what frustrates me, is like a must-watch movie for cinephiles. It's like, imagine you're someone who's like you, a collector, someone who watches all these movies, who's seen lots of classics, lots of modern movies, who goes to the cinema every week, you know, someone who watches cinema with a critical lens, a cinephile. Imagine that person hasn't seen Jurassic Park. You're gonna tell me it's not must-watch? Bullshit.
It's weird. It's weird. Wait a minute for it. Yeah, okay.
Over to your list,
Cool.
AJ.
Right, okay. So I feel bad that this one is always in a low region to me, but it is just what it is. But you can't talk classic Disney without talking the beginning. And it's not that I didn't enjoy the film and I'm just putting it in as an honorary. It's a good one, but it has a few beats that just don't overly ring with me. And that is Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. We open to talk? Okay, cool.
Wait,
Like,
no, let's
I,
talk. Let's talk.
yeah, I'm open to Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs. And what's funny, as I've always said, and this you'll see it along the way. Well, one other story comes up. I'm familiar with the Disney released books, not the cartoons. And it's really dawned on me how many of them I had missed as a kid. I've seen Disney movies as a kid, please don't get me wrong. The book had more detail than the film. And that kind of troubled me when I
Sure.
watched it. Yeah, it was like the whole, you know, going back to Silver Screen News, skin as white as snow, lips as red as the blood that drips. And, you know, all of these different things. And the definition as to why she is Snow White was never really shown in the film. It was also very, but I mean, look, it's nearing 100 years old. I can't diss the film for it. But the voice was very theatrical, very exaggerated, very high pitched.
Yes, whistle while you work. Na, 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 na,
Yeah.
na.
And it just missed something. And the other thing that kind of bugged me with the Seven Dwarfs was the first time they're singing Hi Ho, Hi Ho, It's Off to Work We Go, they're heading home. And I was like, okay, have something else. There's something else you could clearly sing. It was just little bits along that. But overall, it's a great experience. And I'm happy I've seen it. And it is a landmark. And as I said, the impact Snow White has, that you still have little girls dressing up as Snow White today, nearly 100 years on, is something to
I
be
thought like
respected. So it is a great movie. Yeah, there is something I'm going to bring up a bit later on. I've only got, well, yeah. But yeah, it's a fun movie, just not the world's most earth-shaking, but it's good to know that this is where Disney started.
it is. It's a nice piece of cinema history. It's got beautiful hand-drawn animation, very interesting use of crossfades and transitions, which for 1937 was quite the editing feat. Like that scene where she's running through the forest. And the trees, which she's imagining the trees as like
That was
scary
actually
monsters.
really good. Yeah.
Really good, right? I'm like, Jesus, this is 1937. How are you doing this? I mean, I get that it's a crossfade, but that's a 2023 editor speaking, not a 1937
Yeah.
animation artist. I'm like, well done. Like
Yeah.
the fact that you thought of doing this, well done, clever.
And I like the way they just show how people's minds escape. Like, again, going back to that part where she believes it's a crocodile. Like, this is what had people scared of the dark. This is how your mind plays with you. And they captured it really well.
Hold on to that fire. I'm going to bring that up again, the way the mind plays with you in a video, in a entry later on.
Selection.
We'll come
Yeah.
back to that.
Right.
But yeah, very good. I'm glad that's on the list.
Thank you. In at number nine, this is nostalgia. And I did try to watch it, and I'm so early in on the film, it's a bit of a sin. But in at number nine for me is one that I had put a smile on my face remembering it. Rescuers Down Under. Have you seen it? Are you familiar with the Rescuers?
So, bro, I struggled so hard with not putting this on my top 10. I can't tell you. I adore this film. It just didn't make it on. It would have been around the similar position as where you've put it. It's superb. It's one of the few Disney movies where I can legitimately say, and it's very few, maybe the only one, the sequel. So much better than the original.
So, fun fact, I've not even seen The Rescuers. I
And
had
it's good.
the
The Rescuers is good, but this is like, no, they came to play here.
Yeah, like, so I'm a bit sketchy with the story, but I remember having this VHS, and to me, it was just Rescuers Down Under. I didn't know that there was Rescuers and Rescuers Down Under. It was many years later I realized there's a Rescuers, and I've just not had a chance to watch it. Thank God for Disney Plus, because I will be banging them both out. But I wanted to do Down Under again for it, and I just didn't have a chance to finish the film. But it was just one of those films that, if I could talk about our generation growing up, we had cartoons coming out from everywhere. Now, mentally, and I knew they were different characters, Chip and Dale Rescue Rangers, being chipmunks, and these two mice who were rescuers, and then the Australian connection that they have as well, was all somehow connected. And it just, you didn't even appreciate it if it was Disney or not. It was just a great cartoon in your face, you know? And everything just seemed to come from Disney at the time, short of Land Before Time. So it was just a great moment for me watching this as a kid. And it's these rescuers, these bunch of mice coming to rescue a little boy who's rescued animals along the way, as you see, and now being captured by a poacher, and they're on this mission. I wish I could go deeper. I need to rewatch this.
Oh, I
I
can.
remember having
Oh, I can.
great fun with this film. Feel free to, please.
It's superb, this movie. So the rescuers, the Rescue Aid Society, are a group of mice who go out and help orphaned children who are being abused. Now, already, that is some dark subject matter. And there are parts with regards to the orphans which is darker in the first film, but I would argue what's so scary about Rescuers Down Under is Muldoon, the villain. Like, dude, can we just acknowledge there's a point where Cody falls into one of his traps, and to get him out, he shoves a shotgun in his face. I'm like, this is a Disney movie. You're putting a gun into a boy's face, and you would have to presume, given that he's a poacher, that thing's loaded. Like, it's It's quite amazing. So Cody gets kidnapped because, you know, this big bad dude, voiced, by the way, by George Scott, George C. Scott, he of Patton and he of Doctor Strangelove fame.
Yeah, yeah.
So, yeah. So, brilliant villain, stunning setting in Australia, like, beautiful setting. And a real globe-trotting adventure, you know, going from Europe, from America all the way over to Australia, integrating with the local Australian Rescue Aid Society and the cultures there. It was really interesting. Some comedy in the form of Orville, the big albatross bird. But it's quite the adventure they go on. And it get much like... Is there another mouse movie on your list?
No.
Okay, cool.
No. I know the one because I just saw it. Yeah, yeah. And I'm so blank on it, but I remember watching it and I'm like, so I need to watch it again.
Dude, so good. There was this period in the 80s and 90s where Disney were not afraid of going dark with their animations. And The Rescuers was prime example of that. Now, Down Under is such an unsung hero of a movie. I love it. Thank you for putting it on.
No, absolute pleasure. Absolute pleasure. Okay, so with Snow White, I mentioned how there are Disney princesses that I'm familiar with their story and hadn't actually seen their cartoon. This is one that I was so shocked I hadn't seen it before. And I absolutely loved it. It's just that the others that are in the list are like very near and dear to me. This is why she's not higher up. But a couple of years later, Cinderella came out and what a movie. Mm-hmm. What a movie. It's not just a glass slipper.
It's cool, isn't it?
She may come up later in your list. Sleeping Beauty, I'm watching, but I'm still kind of trying to get into. Cinderella hit the marks off the bat. I was like, this is really good. I'm not afraid to say it. I was like, this is good. But again, I don't know what the fascination is. And this is from a guy who's very scared of the movie Ratatouille. But the mice have got me. Little Gus and the other one.
The little sexist mice.
We won't get into what they are, but just the energy they had and the determination.
Live the soaring to the women, like.
But no, honestly, look, it's a bygone era. Certain things people saw so in really a different way. Yeah, but apart from that, I as much as I knew the story, I really enjoyed the way Disney told this story, the way the sisters are portrayed, the fitting as a glass slipper. Obviously, none of this is spoilers. Everybody knows the story of Cinderella. The interaction of the mice, how they get transformed into every character, the magic of the dog, who's, you know, the life lesson. Don't chase Lucifer the cat. And they are. I sat back and again, like, it sounds stupid. Because I've read the books and not heard the stories, I'm a bit unfamiliar with some of the classic songs. So when I watched The Big Bang Theory and Bernadette's talking about how she likes Cinderella and Raj's redhead girlfriend gets into how the story of the cut toes, and she's like, I like Bibbidi Bobbidi Doo. I was like, huh? What? It just sounded funny. I heard the song. I was like, that song's awesome. I had such a great moment with this song.
Yeah, man.
It's ignorant. It's sad that I didn't know it before, but I just loved it. I was just sitting back with pure bliss into how they just joined it all together. It was the magic of Disney. Honestly was.
It is.
I'm a big Cinderella fan. Loved it. Loved it.
Yeah. It's not on my list, but it is. It's very good. It's very good. And also, F that cat.
Yeah.
All right. My number 10. Oh, I'm sad I'm not putting this high because it's such a great movie, but I don't know if I'd change anything else, but it needs to be top 10. Might be a punt, get ready, but my number 10, Alice in Wonderland.
Yeah, it's a small punt. It's a punt, isn't it?
So I'd like to, at this point, add a disclaimer for my list. My Disney animated, classic animated list is, some would argue, weirdly ordered. There's movies in here which people would say I've put too high. Some movies people would say shouldn't be in there at all. given that you've just spoken about things like Cinderella, Snow White and the Seven Dwarves, which are not even on my list. And you may see movies on here which are like, how are these on here and those are not? All the movies on here have either made a massive impression on me as a kid, to the degree that I rewatch them, rewatch them, rewatch them. And even now, when I've gone back as an adult, I'm like, it's not just nostalgia. I still love this. It hits all the right beats for me. Some of them, I would say, even formed who I am as a film fan. Wait for my number four in particular. You'll be like, huh? Wait for it. So all of the disclaimers done. My number nine is The Sword in the Stone.
So this is a funny film, because
Yes, it
I'm
is.
just going to hit it off on the bat before you give it all the praises it deserves. Loving history and loving the whole story of King Arthur, I was really looking for one thing, and it went into this weird adventure that I didn't expect. And I remember you saying you love it, and the missus said she loved it, and I was like, huh? And I couldn't get into it because I was expecting something else. Now that I know not to expect that, Sword in the Stone is entitled to a second watch from me. That's all I can say, because I wasn't a fan of what was being portrayed to me that time when I watched it. All you
It's
now.
a prequel. It's
Yeah.
It's an origin story. It's Iron Man 1.
Captain America, the first Avenger.
Literally. Dude, I loved it. I loved the idea of this young boy who's destined to become king and who's nurtured and formed into the man he's meant to be by his almost father figure like Merlin. I loved that he was, I love the set pieces in it, how he learns to be brave and how he learns to be kind. And then he realizes that all of these things were in him anyway. And, the set pieces of like being turned into a little fish and running through the moat or escaping from the carp. And when they're squirrels and the wizarding the magic off when, when he's flying and then he ends up with Mad Madam Mim and the wizard off between Merlin and Madam Mim with the dragons and stuff. It's like, it's contained and yet epic. It somehow does them both. It's like a really lovely small father-son character study, but at the same time, grandiose in scale. It manages to tread this line beautifully. And I think I'd actually go out on a limb and say, I think it's Disney's most underrated animated movie. I think it's a truly great film, this one.
Cool, that's interesting, because I know there's another one that is like very underrated because of the era it released in. I know you got a lot of love for. Sadly, didn't make my list, but yeah,
Oh, it's coming.
I'm sure. I'm very sure it was. Okay, so I wish I could see more. It is on my to rewatch list. That is a fact. Okay.
Watch it as a father-son story, and it's so good.
Okay. Cool.
So good. All right. My
Your
number
number
eight
eight.
might be the one that you were just talking about. My number eight, The
Exactly
Hunchback.
that
The
one. It
Hunchback
kind of
of
hurt to
Notre
not
Dame.
have this on the list. Hunchback of Notre Dame. It really did
So
hurt to not
good,
have it.
bro. It's so wonderful. I dark, really dark. Like when you think about that opening about the gypsies fleeing and Frollo catching them and basically about to commit babycide until the church stops him. And then he raises this young deformed gypsy to become the bell ringer of Notre Dame. And like diametrically opposed to what The Sword in the Stone is, which is a father-son story of loving and tenderness and care. This is one of those, call child support services father-son stories. It's so horrible what Frollo puts him through, the manipulation he puts him through, this tainted view of the world he gives him to keep him locked up. And then uses the only opportunity when he gets out and isn't prepared to tackle the world properly because he hasn't been briefed on what people can be like. Frollo then uses that opportunity to double down and reinforce how terrible the world is, all for the sake of manipulation and control. Meanwhile, he also discovers on that day out, on that fateful day out, that there's good in the world in the form of another gypsy, Esmeralda. And yeah, it's, little spoiler here. Yeah, it's sad that the obvious person doesn't necessarily get the girl, but it's not as clear cut as, oh, hero should get girl. This isn't a story about that. This is a story about hero needs to find self-acceptance and be accepted. And it literally, in the opening of the movie, that song that, what's his name? Oh, I can't remember what the Harlequin's called. Is it Corvax? I can't remember. I think it's Corvax. The song he's singing, now here is a riddle to guess if you can sing the bells of Notre Dame. What makes a monster and what makes a man, you know? And can we also just say Tom Hulce? Freaking Tom Hulce, Mozart himself voices Quasimodo, which I love that touch. Should have had a bigger career, Tom Hulce. I really like that guy. But yeah, it's great. And even the way they do their songs are diametrically opposed to show both of them. You know, the world is cruel, the world is wicked. And then it cuts straight into, you know, spend one day out there. And then this passionate, lustful song that Frodo sings in the fire. And then he goes on basically starts his own little genocide, trying to tear down all of Paris while searching for Esmeralda in some lust-fueled rampage. Like, there's a lot of crazy stuff going on in this movie. And you're looking at it and going, this a Disney movie? Like, yeah, okay. That's weird. Way more risque than what they do now. Jesus.
So much. It lacks depth nowadays, doesn't it? You know, there's one thing I would say, and obviously people quote different movies along the way, but this was part of like a new era of Disney. Like, we, you know, it became the big, I don't recall seeing Rescuers Down Under in the cinema or knowing it to be in the cinema. I could have been just off.
I don't think so.
Yeah, whereas we had other films that I'm sure will be mentioned that came out, and this was, you know, this was the last of it. And to me, this always sticks in my head as the last movie from Disney before animation style changed, because there was a different way that they started to draw their characters after Hunchback of Notre Dame. They may come up later. And I must admit, I did kind of lose touch with Disney after that. But I do always appreciate this film. It needs a revisit, because I watched it, I think it's just the once. Had a great time. Saw it in the cinema with my aunt. I remember this. But I've not been back to it. And this is why it normally falls off of my list, sadly. Yeah. So that's the thing. And when I say I kind of lost touch with Disney and that the animation had changed, that was your number 8, right?
That was my 8. So you're 7.
Yeah. So the transition into it is, this is one that had gone back to that kind of classical animation of Disney, but came at a much later date. Came in 2000. I don't know if you've seen it. Brother Bear.
Heard of it, never saw it.
It's absolutely insane, because I really thought that I would never be a Brother Bear fan, in the sense that I was just like, what is this about? Whatever, it's a new generation for kids. I've got other stuff to watch. Not that I'm against animation, because I was watching Toy Story 2 or Toy Story 1 at the time that this came out, released in 2000.
Toy Story 1 did not come out in 2000.
Well, I might have been rewatching it. I'm just saying what was about. At the time, you know what I mean? It's not like I wasn't saying animation in my pantheon. I wasn't opposed to anything. I was definitely watching Shrek. Either way, do you know what I mean? Like, there were different stuff going on. What came about with this is, my cousin was a kid and had it. And again, I don't think it had a cinema release, and it was just VHS that he had. And he would watch it all the time. And I'm like, what is this? And I finally started to sit down and watch it. And it's the story of like an Alaskan hunter kid who kills and chases a bear, right? He chases the bear, kills it. And in this, there's a lot of mythology and spirituality. And because they thought that the killing was unjust of what they've done, he goes to bed and wakes up as a bear for his sins, for the crimes that he's committed. And coincidentally, he now becomes the quote-unquote big brother to the bear whose mother he's just killed. And obviously, being someone who's hunted bears, he's quite disgusted with it or what have you. And this bond actually builds between the two of them. And the only way for him to become human again is to catch the Northern Lights. But the bond that is built in there was something that was quite touching and quite, I was like, it feels a bit original Disney, you know, like the old school where I'd lost touch of it. This was the magic of Disney that was once brought back to me. And maybe it's the nostalgia of me chilling with my cousin and him getting that experience of Disney magic. But there was something about this film that has just stuck with me that I'm like, this is actually quite cool. I actually really like it. It just gives me the warm and fuzzies in my tum tum, if I'm honest. I just like it.
It's Shout out, Simon Miller.
Yeah, but it just gives me a little something, you know? Great guy, by the way. Great guy. Not on substances we previously assumed. But yeah, it for a newer movie, I put my hand up and I salute this one. I was like, well done, Disney. You still got it in you.
Can't comment, but yeah, I'll check it out.
Cool.
Your number six.
Right, in at number six is the punt that you hit in at number 10. Alice in Wonderland.
Superb.
As you said, it needs to be in the top 10 conversation. And this is one that, where Rescuers is a bit of a blank to me, this is one I can really remember. One I had great experiences with. One that is such a treasured memory to me that when they released the live action versions, I have not been so disgusted at how they've damaged something that was so near and dear to me. Alice in Wonderland is pure gold. It just has a great adventure. A girl who's followed a white rabbit down the hole and they're trying to now get home, and the madness that ensues. The you know, all the characters. You've got cards, you've got the Mad Hatter, you've got the Cheshire Cat, the Caterpillar, all of these weird and wonderful characters that just make up the wonderful mystique that is Wonderland. Love it. Just absolutely love it. I mean, everyone knows the story, and this is why I'm going to keep these kind of short and sharp. But it just was a great adventure as a kid. It's dark, yet humorous, which I really love about it. It's very dark, but it really gives you some great
Very
memories. Very dark, but you can still find humor and pleasure in it.
it really weirds me out that Disney between the 30s to the 90s were capable of treading the line so well between being entertaining, pretty colorful, inventive, but so dark. So dark, like didn't shy away from kids dying, from mothers dying, from fathers dying. Now we've gone full woke and we want to do happy, happy, lucky, lucky with the world. And it's like they're tarnishing their own legacy. Like
Where's the depth, isn't it? Where's the depth?
they really are destroying. It's crazy to me that for 6 decades, they brought so much joy across the decades to so many children. And the kids now growing up watching these remakes going, well, that's not very good. I'm not a big fan of Disney. I'm like, if that's your basis, I don't blame you.
Yeah. Do you know, it was grounded life lessons. It was subtle life lessons along the way. The acceptance of loss. Not that you're ever prepared for loss along the way, but you see it so much. You experience like mini heartbreaks when you watch these Disney movies. And it's kind of gone, Like, with respect, obviously, it's somewhere I can't bring up. The feelings you have with losing someone in these early Disney movies versus to Moana losing her grandmother later on. It's not comparable. It's just not. But yeah, we digress.
Yeah, I'm with you. So that was your number.
That was my number six. So over to you. You're seven or
Okay,
six.
my seven. One which I know I'm not alone. I know you've got a circle of friends too that rate this movie. Another one of Disney's unsung heroes from the Disney Renaissance era, on the back end of the Renaissance era. All-time great, Hercules.
Yes, that is you. I knew it's you. I've watched it and I need to embrace it a bit more. It's the
Oh,
new animation I'm still getting adapted to when I
dude,
with
it's
it.
just everything about, from I love the story of how he's stolen from Mount Olympus and then raised on not understanding who he is, and then realizing that Zeus and Hera are his parents, and trying to find a way back to Mount Olympus. Being faced with all of these ordeals along the way that the evil Hades, voiced by James Woods in one of the performances of his career, to the degree that I would actually put Hades as a, top three Disney villain for me, Hades. Easily. He's incredible. Steals the show in this movie. But yeah, the spirited Megara, I loved her. She's got one of the all-time great songs. All-time great Disney songs. No chance, no way, I won't say it, no, no. So good. I love the muses being the narrator, the narrators. We'll take it from here. Top to bottom, this movie works for me. I cannot sing its praises enough. Not just one of Disney's best movies, the best Hercules movie we've ever had. The best.
I could probably agree with that. I could probably agree with that.
Forget The Rock. Forget that. Those other horrible Disney movies. Not interested. This is the best Hercules movie. The only way you could get me interested in another Hercules movie is if you told me Kevin Sorbo was coming to do a live-action Hercules movie.
Well played. Well played. Cool.
That's a deep cut. You know, you know.
Yeah, yeah. Good times, Channel 5. Good times. Okay, so that was your number 7 and your number 6?
You mentioned it. I've rewatched it. Okay, so I've taken on a new love. I've always adored this film. But we've got one of those little musical Tony boxes for Leia, for my daughter. You put like these figurines on top of this. It's basically a box that plays Disney songs or other famous songs. Like, it's kids' radio, but it's a great detractor to stop them watching TV, which she does not do. And hearing her play the songs from this movie really brought back some memories to the degree that I was like, I'm going to go and rewatch this. Oh, it's so good. And it makes me happy that she loves the song so much, having not even seen the movie. And that is Sleeping Beauty. Dark
I'm not into hell.
I know, that which scares me. Like,
yeah,
it's so dark. And I love the gothic animation in it.
Yeah,
everything long and spiky and ominous, and it's got one of the. How far have you got?
She is still No, she's still looking for Cinderella. It's kind of early on. I'm in the first like
looking 20, for Cinderella, Aurora,
Cinderella, Aurora. Sorry, yeah. So Aurora's they were just making the dress. To be honest, it's still early. It's still very early. They just finished making the dress for her.
They were debating whether it should be pink or blue. Make it pink, make it blue, make it pink, make it blue.
Yeah. Yeah.
Okay, she's going to sleep soon. Very soon. The scene that leads to her going to sleep. Turn the lights off and watch that scene and tell me it doesn't send shivers up your spine. No. The music they play. So what the Tony box does for Leia is that they sing all the famous songs from the movie, and then there's someone who narrates the story in like a condensed. They basically tell you an hour and a half in 15 minutes. It's very good. But the scene where they're describing her as she falls asleep, they play the music from the movie in the background. Na, na, na. Dun. Na, na, na. It still sends shivers up my spine. Like, it is like to see that as a child. It does it to Anya as well. We both looked at each other when we heard it the first time I went, did that just get you? She's like, still gets me. It's creepy, bro. And then what I love is that the story transitions from being about Aurora to being about Philip, and he's such a badass. He is the coolest Disney prince of them all. He is such a badass.
Wait till you see what he does. By Philip. I'm not going to. I'll tell you why, because it kind of threw me off, right? Obviously, I've not seen him inform you. Come again?
Stalker vibes?
It's not that. He was at least 5 or 6 years old. Looking over a baby who's going to be his intended wife. Now, don't get me wrong, I'm all down for.
And what face did he pull? What face did he pull?
I know, but I was just like, really, Disney? Is that the way we're going to go about this? Like, obviously, the older you get, the less it's inclined. But it was around. We're led to understand that it's her 16th birthday. This is a 22-year-old man chasing a 16-year-old girl. It feels a bit wrong.
Also, the Middle Ages.
I get it. It's just one of the details I wish they hadn't thrown in. Like, make him the same age, and that would have been all good. But yeah.
Okay. Listen, through the lens of 2023, of course you're right. It's set in the Middle Ages. Like, completely normal. It's cool.
I get it. I get
Betrothed,
it.
your marriage is decided when you're born, if you're royal. End of. Like, don't make that, do not make this a thing. Like,
I'm not. I'm...
Philip is an, just wait till you see what he does. Oh, Philip
Well,
is
this is
such
interesting.
a
I'll tell you the thing that caught my attention with the other earlier ones was we talk about like female empowerment. I don't want to drag too long on this, guys, but female empowerment being something new in film. I pretty much realized that these Disney princesses are definitely the stars of their movies. Like
100
Prince
percent.
Charming in both Cinderella, Cinderella and Snow White were waste men on the side who just turned up and it's like happy ending. I loved how they were not that relevant. But it's interesting to see that Sleeping Beauty changed the mold than that because I, yeah.
Prince Charming and Snow White just showed up and kissed a dead girl. He's a necrophile, as far as I'm concerned.
Charming's a bad guy, but Philip's a badass. Subject to taking a piece.
Philip's betrothed, Charming kissed a dead girl.
All right, cool. We
Logic.
move on. We move on. We move on.
Just wait till you see the lengths that Prince Philip goes to for her. It's so like, go on, lad. It's badass. It's
Nice.
seriously badass. But you didn't find Maleficent intimidating as all hell?
Oh, she is. She is. Like,
She's
honestly,
such
just
a
the minute she
presence.
turns up, the way she turns up and is like, oh, I figured my invitation wasn't there. And they're like, you weren't intended to be invited. Oh, okay. And with that, and then she just starts to put the curse on. I was like, oh, you're bad.
I
You're bad.
too shall
Indeed.
bestow a gift upon the princess. She's so sinister. Dude, when her and Philip go toe to toe, it's like, whoa,
Nice.
it's serious.
Looking
It's one
forward
of
to
the
it.
great, great, great Disney final battles. It's
Nice.
legitimately fantastic. I love it. And come on.
Cool.
I know you are. Come on. Once upon a dream.
I
One of the
know that
great
was a nice
songs.
one. It's a nice song. I was like, oh, I have heard it. Like that's what happened to me when I started watching this film. I was like, oh, that's where you're from. I've got some learning to do. I'm not ashamed to admit it. But now, what comes up in this top five is Disney territory that's not new to me. This is the ones I grew up on. These are the nears and dears. So here we go. In at number five, it kind of hurt me to put this in at number five for me, but hey, the list be the list, the order be the order. In at number five for me, Robin Hood.
Interesting. Okay.
Yeah, I wasn't sure. I wasn't sure. It felt wrong to make it not even top four because this was
Wow.
a great moment, bro. Honestly, I remember Robin Hood being one of those where they Disney re-released a lot of their films. And there's another one that comes up a bit later on for me in the list. And they were gold. It was just a pleasure watching these films. And Robin Hood was all kinds of awesome. Dressed is a lot like someone who you may have on your list, who you said you realize is an annoying little boy, but this was my guy. I just
Peter
loved.
Pan is absolutely not on my list.
Do you know, I've never seen it. Never seen the cartoon. And
It's
but I
good.
just always remember David, they were dressed the same. But yeah, I just really had the greatest of times of the guy who steals from the poor and gives, steals from the rich and
No.
gives to the poor. No, he doesn't do
Yes.
that. That would be the rest. The Sheriff of Nottingham, little the king, the intended. It all works. Him chasing Maid Marian, Little John being the big, huge bear, Friar Tuck with his. They're still showing you alcoholism as much as they can't, they do. Like it all works, you know. Oh God, I'm forgetting the names, but the
Did you
snake.
notice that the voice of, I'm sure this movie's going to come up on your list. I know you love it. Did you notice that the voice of Little John the
And Bill.
bear was the same as another bear?
Of course, of course. It's just the way bears talk. But yeah, it's head to toe greatness. Like Robin Hood, the greatest archer. This is how we're going to catch him up. No, he dresses up as like some other. He
A
dresses up
stalk.
as a bird, as a stork to get through, and then he gets caught. And he's it's just great fun the whole way through. And then you talk about Hercules having a great narrator. You've got this giant
Rooster, yeah.
Chicken. Yeah, rooster, that's the correct word. Because the other one sounds like I can get demonetized. Just singing along and harmonizing the whole way through. It's awesome. Absolutely love Robin Hood.
Nottingham. Yeah, the rooster was great. I like the rooster. It was a bit meta, wasn't it? It was quite meta the way it went from like, when narrating, oh, but actually, I'm part of this story. It was cool.
Yeah.
It was cool. Listen, never top 10 for me, but definitely fun.
Listen, I love it, man.
When you're saying you're not a top 10 Disney movie, that's not any diss on you. Like, there's so much quality in this classic animation realm. It's crazy. Crazy. Cool. So that was your five, yeah?
Yeah, over to you.
Likewise to me for my five, for my top five, this is the part where the order is going to throw people. And there's going to be a lot of question marks about this. But to quote you, the list is the list. I feel like just telling you to say punt, but, you know, for the sake of revealing. Yeah, go on. You're going to get your finger ready on the punt. My number five, The Lion King.
That is a punt.
Okay.
In at number four for me, Donde Estas. Okay. I feel it's either similar territory or it's your turn to tell me punt. The all-time classic that is Beauty and the Beast.
That would be a punt.
Okay. We're in that territory where they hit. Okay. In at number
four and three are not on your list, I guarantee it. Four and three are absolutely not on your list.
There are certain classics that will be there. I think I know what your number four is once you gave this, it shaped certain elements for you as a film fan. I don't know. There's something in my head that tells me, what it is. But in at number three, what now? Or
no, yeah, tell me what you think my four is.
Is it Ichabod?
Well done. Fucking hell. My number four is the Adventures of Ichabod Crane and Mr. Toad. Well done. Well bloody done. I'm impressed.
I remember the impression that it had on you when we were talking about short. I can't remember what the topic was, and I remember going back to watch it, but I remember how ingrained it was to you, and something told me that your film appreciation from this short film meant a lot. So yeah, thank you.
So yeah, you something you mentioned earlier about Sleeping Beauty, about the imagination of when she's seeing things in the forest. Yeah, they did the same. So they did a similar thing with Ichabod Crane when he's going through Sleepy Hollow. Dude, this is the most risque of any. The Mr. Toad stuff is fine. It's basically The Wind in the Willows. The Ichabod Crane stuff, which is The Legend of Sleepy Hollow, that's what I want to double down on. This is it's the bravest movie Disney have ever done. This is the darkest film they've ever done. This is the most foreboding film they've ever done. Let's just call a spade a spade. The hero dies in this. The hero dies a horrible death in this. And it's got the Jaws factor too. The final death is like, it's the great unseen. It's the blood and the bubbles coming up to the surface like in Jaws. It's just the smashed pumpkin on the ground the following morning. You know, from the moment this... It's only 25 minutes long. It's very short. I saw it as a child and it scarred me. Scarred me. I couldn't sleep for weeks. I don't know what it was. Different things scare all of us. This, as a kid, very young kid, age 4 or 5, scared the living bejesus out of me. And it's still, it's so much so that I watch it now and it still like makes me like want to hide under my blanket.
Interesting.
And in having such a powerful emotive reaction on me, I genuinely believe that this film is single-handedly responsible for my love of horror.
Interesting. I get it, though. I get it.
And that's why I put it so high, because you break it down. This school teacher comes to town, falls in love with the local village beauty, Catherine Van Tassel. And, you know, the local jock type fella, Brom Bones, plays what seems nothing more than a seamless, than a vindictive but harmless prank on him, knowing that Ichabod Crane is superstitious, and sings a song to him on Halloween night about the legend of the Headless Horseman. Turns out it's more than a legend. And Ichabod Crane, completely paranoid, completely terrified, has to take the ride home through Sleepy Hollow at night. You know, much like in Snow White, his brain starts to play tricks on him. The sounds, you know, the frogs aren't going, wah, wah. They're going, Ichabod, Ichabod. You know, all of these things start to play on him. And then he realizes that it's just, you know, it's just his superstition, it's his paranoia, and he starts to laugh at himself. And then you hear that horrible, horrible laughter, that shriek. And it's the freaking headless horseman that literally chases him through the forest of Sleepy Hollow and kills him. There's no two ways about it. The headless horseman kills him. The narrator even says at the end, now some people believe that Ichabod had just left the town of Sleepy Hollow, moved on to settle down elsewhere. But those two knew that he had been spirited away by the headless horseman. It's like, oh, so he's dead. He's very dead. Like, sorry, tell me any other Disney movie where the hero, it's not insinuated, it's like dead in nasty ways by a freaking demon.
No, there isn't. There
This
isn't.
is
Categorically
this
isn't.
is this is this is an animation? Like, are you a demon that kills a school teacher? Are you joking? And people are telling me animation's not powerful. Are you actually joking? Like, break down what's happening on screen. Don't give me some late Revenge of the Sith. Oh, but he killed younglings. Yeah, you never saw it. Here, there's a demon chasing man, and he gets killed. It's so powerful. Like, maybe I'll show it to my daughter.
Well, I mean, lessons be lessons is the way I kind of break that down.
It made a huge impression on me. Anyway, you're number three.
Yeah, so give me 1 second, just making some notes or something. Perfect. Okay, in at number three is the voice of the bear that was mentioned before, because yeah, this is one of the all-time greats for me. The Jungle Book. Just,
I know you love this one. I know
Yeah,
you
I
love it.
mean, this is another one that, again, I took Robin Hood, and the other one that I was holding back on was The Jungle Book. These are re-released classics from Disney that came out in an era where we were growing up. And it was just absolutely mad fun. I didn't even know what to expect the first time my parents were like, here's The Jungle Book. You're like, okay, cool. And I remember just loving it. The story of Mowgli, the young boy who's raised by wolves, and everyone knows me, down with the wolf pack. And it was just from there, and this adventure of he can't stay, he needs to be brought up by anyone. And then Baloo and Bagheera, like Bagheera taking him on, seeing the excitement and the more exciting life that you get with Baloo as opposed to Bagheera, who's a bit more, you know, serious. But that friendship between the
Bagheera is a
mad
prat.
bear and the. Come again?
Bagheera is a prat.
You don't like Bagheera?
He's a patronizing.
Okay, 53. Sorry. yeah, basically, look, he's got what he's got. I actually still like him. But it's the journey, and it's Mowgli trying to find his way through all these different animals, essentially, in this jungle. And it's the songs. The songs are just amazing. I just loved all of them, whether it's Scar singing Trust in Me, whether it's the elephants with the military march, whether it's obviously Baloo singing Bare Necessities, whether it's King Louie with I Want to Be Like You, you know,
That's my song.
the three buzzards who are essentially the Beatles, and they're just singing, like, you know, is it Friends? I
Four
can't remember what
buzzards.
they're singing. It was the four, isn't it? And you know, they are the Beatles. And it's what do
Hey,
you want to do?
Flash.
I don't know. What do you want to
What do you
do?
want to
Yeah.
do?
I don't know. What do you want to do? I don't know. What do you want to do? Ah, not this
Shake
again.
on.
And then Shere Khan, you know, who just wants that. He just wants Mowgli, but that fear of fire and from top to bottom, great film. The Elephants, the Military March. I love that song as well. All of it is just a great
song. Parade.
Trust me, John Favreau, you have no idea how much you scarred me by not putting that in your movie. I was going to say live action, I dare not. But, you know, it hurt me to not have that. It hurt me to not have that. Christopher Walken, for all of his greatness and being the perfect casting for King Louis, just did not have the magic of the original King Louis. It just missed a beat. And this is the magic of the original Disney animation. Like, if you want to talk that original can't be recaptured, I don't think you can express it more than the Jungle Book. Honestly.
Listen, it was good enough to get its own Disney spin-off series.
Yeah.
What was it? Baloo was that big pilot. Baloo was the pilot, wasn't he?
Yeah.
What was it?
Was it actually? But it was a weird film. Yeah, I know what you're talking about.
It wasn't a film. It was a series. Like,
yes, yeah, a series. I know exactly what you're talking about.
Villain, but not a villain. It was, I can't remember what it was called. Was it called Bear Wings, Baloo Wings, Pilot Wings, something like that?
Yeah.
It basically took all the Jungle Book characters and put them into, like, they made them bipeds and made them talk and gave them jobs and stuff. It was very weird, but it weirdly worked.
80s and 90s, you got to love it. Really? You got to love it. But yeah, no, I love the Jungle Book, man. Okay.
My three?
Your number. Can I take a stab?
Sure.
Again, you said 4 and 3 aren't on my list with such conviction that I would go with The Fox and the Hound at number 3.
No. It broke my heart to leave The Fox and the Hound off, because I love that film. But that was with Rescuers and with Pinocchio, just like, oh, I want to put you on so badly, but you just can't make it. Still hurts me to leave those three off. And on any other day, maybe they would have come on. But I'm not going on what I think objectively are better movies. I'm going on what I think subjectively are my favorite films. No, it's a film that I didn't love as a child, and it was only a few years ago, literally a few years ago. This can't be more than 5-6 years now. Rewatched it, and I was like, whoa, this is good. Whoa, this is good. And I've rewatched it a few times since then, and it just gets better and better every time. Helps also that Leia's also got this on her little Tony box, so we're hearing the songs all the time. Got arguably the best, arguably, all things subjective, it's got arguably the best Disney song in it. And not a lot of people love this movie, which I don't get. But my number 3 is Pocahontas. I adore this film. Absolutely. I know. A lot of people either haven't seen it, or when it came out, like in the height of the 90s, it was so, like, different to all of the other 90s Disney movies that I don't think people were quite ready for it. But if you want one of the
most... This is where the animation slightly changed for me, and I just wasn't ready for it.
Ever so slightly, yes. This is such a... I mean, it's the story of the West Virginia Company coming to the Newfoundland, coming to the new territories and going to war with what they call the savages in search for gold. And in amongst them is Captain John Smith, voiced by Mel Gibson, who happens to take a great liking to one of these local savages called Pocahontas. But as she shows him, similar beats to The Hunchback of Notre Dame, what makes a monster, what makes a man. You know, in this case, it's who is the real savage. You know, she sings Colors of the Wind to him, which I believe is the best Disney song. When you listen to it, like actually listen to it, not just listen to it as a form of entertainment, listen to it lyrically and what it's saying. Powerful, powerful song. And if there was, you know, the way that X-Men is an allegory for racism, so is Pocahontas. It's a wonderful, wonderful allegory for racism, for, you know, walking in someone else's shoes, seeing the world from someone else's point of view, not judging others just based on how they look, and actually coming together as people. the message behind it is wonderful. Absolutely wonderful. Animation can be a bit like, woo, jarring, because it's very different to the other stuff they've done. It's got a bit of a Sleeping Beauty vibe, the way that everything feels a bit stretched. You get used to it. It's a powerful piece of cinema.
Yeah, it's something I need to get used to. I think I need to do from Pocahontas onwards. There was that gap where I left off. And Hercules took me a while. I think I just need to adapt and evolve is my way, you know. But I'm intrigued.
You've got to get onto it.
I am intrigued to see that one. Right, my number two, this morning it was my number one. It's as I was putting the images on, I was like,
"We've got.
Why is it number one?
100%, we've got the same number two.
Okay. Aladdin.
Yep.
Yeah. It was my number one for the longest, and I felt all the magic I've always had for Aladdin. And then my number one, which is obvious because I've punted it already, just hit more beats. And I always say, when I say Disney, I think Aladdin pops into my head first, and then I start to picture Belle, then I start to picture Simba, and it starts to unravel. There's something magical about Aladdin. I still remember sitting in the cinema seat watching this film and how it started off and being like the whole Arabian Nights at first, and it starts off kind of edgy, and you're like, "Ooh, this is kind of dark. Where's the laughter? Where's the sunshine? Where's the smiles?" You know that adventure of him finding the magic carpet, just about making it out in time, and then it starts. Now he meets a genie. Now we find out what happens, and then the greatness unfolds. The magic of Robin Williams in animation will forever be there. You know. It's great, top to bottom. And it's just, a street rat trying to make it with a princess after that one fateful meeting when she's snuck out of the temple when she shouldn't have, and how he's shown her the ways of life and they've connected and he can't get over her. But now how does he meet her and how does he have a chance? Well, the only way for a princess to get married is to meet a prince, and this is one of his wishes, and the rest unfolds. And in the mix is the evil Jafar. Yeah.
Top three Disney villain as well. Jafar is top three.
For sure.
Jafar, Hades, and we'll get to who I think the best is. But yeah, the animation in this is stunning. The brother relationship that Aladdin and the genie have is charming. The kind of Romeo and Juliet, it is Romeo and Juliet, isn't it? But the Romeo and Juliet vibe we get from Aladdin and Jasmine is great. Jasmine's hot. Yeah, I said it. I'm just going to say what we're all thinking. Jasmine's hot. Whole New World, one of the great Disney songs, no doubt.
Yeah.
And as you said, as with, seems to be a recurring soundbite, beautifully balances dark and colorful in tone and in visual. It's so close to being my number one. And then I was like, yeah, who am I kidding? My number one is my number one.
There is that. I'm shocked that the Jungle Book squeezed in at number three, because there is that trifecta to me that I normally feel can't be separated, yet it was because of the love for Jungle Book. But I get what you're saying, and it's a great movie. But honestly, when I stopped to break it down in terms of what is a number one for me, I just thought of all the beats. And
before you give your number one, do you have a worst?
All right. No, I don't. I don't.
So I do, but I'd like to be really clear. I like this movie. The Little Mermaid nearly made it on because Ariel is a moron. But The Little Mermaid's got so many things that counterbalance Ariel's stupidity. You know, the great villains, beautiful underwater scenes, great songs. Like, there's too much good in The Little Mermaid for me to say your worst. My worst, because I didn't particularly like the setting. I didn't gravitate towards the central character, although I liked the adventure she went on. But I didn't like her that much in it. Her motives were good, but her didn't gravitate towards. And the ending, I thought, was not something you often say for a Disney movie, but they really, I thought, fluffed the ending on this one. My, again, worst with quotation marks, because it's still a good movie, Mulan.
Interesting. Still, that's another one that's in the list of to be seen for me, so I can't really even quote on it.
Also got one of the great Disney songs, I'll Make a Man Out of You. So good. So good. But the ending does feel weak. But yeah, that's it from the worst. Your number one, which was the punt. Let's go.
Yeah, like hands down, it has to be The Lion King. Do you know what I think was the winning factor for The Lion King? Was the range. And I equally, your number one has range as well. You know, it has the dark moments, it has the light moments.
Leave
But
my number
that
one alone and talk about yours.
I know, I'm just no, but I am going back to mine. I'm just saying, because I know you could say the exact same thing. It's the royal ceremony, that grand opening of a landscape of the Serengeti, you know, to acknowledge the birth of the new young prince and what it is, and him just that zealousness, this wanting to be something, knowing that you're going to be the king of all this land, and just again can't wait to be king. And it's that, then it's his slimy uncle who wishes he could be something more. The loss, honestly. Bambi's mother has nothing on this loss. The only thing that matches this to me in terms of animation and dealing with that loss is Littlefoot's mother. The moment you lose Mufasa, they build Mufasa as such an icon, such a stand figure, someone who just doesn't take no crap. He'll take on the hyenas, he'll go anywhere, he'll take on anyone, but he
He even
just
says it.
can't out.
No one messes with your dad.
Exactly, like you know it, like everyone wants Mufasa, man. Everyone wants to cheer for that guy, and then it's just like bang, this stampede just takes him out. And it's not even a stampede, it's he's I
Scar.
can't say the word, he's DH of a brother who kills him. You know, he even overcame that stampede, and it's like it's that moment, and it's just the way Simba's like, Dad, wake up, Dad, and it's just oh, the heartbreak in that, the exile. The moments that are very similar to the Jungle Book, where he meets Timon and Pumbaa, and it's very much the Baloo lifestyle, and it starts to get into that, this is my life now. But on the same side, while he's living this great life, but has this inner regret, the Serengeti has become a dark cloud. It's just very dark and barren under Scar's rule. And then it comes back. It just seems the songs, what hit me more than anything was the amount of sing-alongs that this has. And I'm not saying
Yeah,
that again,
yeah.
the Jungle Book has them, but they've got the high low, they've got the high moments, the low moments, you know, can you feel the love, to Hakuna Matata, to it just goes all over the
Be
place.
prepared.
Yeah, even down to the fact that none of us have a flying clue what it is, but we're all like, ah, say, and yeah, to kick off the beginning of the show, because it just has it. Elton John is banging out tunes in this, like, yo, it just has everything. And I was like, you know what, this is why you just tip Aladdin for me. It's just, it feels like it's got a
I
mixture
get
of
it. I get it.
everything.
I get it. There's, I'm going to say something that may shock people right now. I think The Lion King is overrated. Now, let's be very clear. I'm not saying it's bad. I think it's one of the greatest animated movies of all time. It's incredible. Listen to the words coming out my mouth. Overrated does not mean bad. Overrated means overrated. The definition of overrated can mean doesn't necessarily mean something bad is made out to be good. It can mean something world class is made out to be the universal WWE galactic champion of the world. Like, it's great. It's effing great. But I do think that it's a bit of the John Cena thing. It's one of the goats. But it's buried a lot in its wake unfairly.
Right,
And let's
okay.
also remember it's a complete rip-off of Kimba the White Lion.
It's gonna have that, and then we can start, you know, I get all of that. Sadly, I've not seen Kimba. I can't sing along to anything from Kimba. Then some would even say, you know, let's go back to Shakespeare times. I get all the inspirations
All
behind it.
Disney is Shakespeare. That's a dead argument. All Disney is
Yeah,
Shakespeare.
but
We were just saying Aladdin is Romeo and Juliet.
yeah, it's. I get it. I can understand all the negatives that could come with it, but there was just something that hit me that It gives you highs, it gives you lows, it gives you the ultimate mix, and that's where I just leaned for it. Highs, lows, loss, gains, the lot, you know.
It's amazing. It's an all-timer. It's absolutely amazing. But for the fact that while I love it, it didn't move me the way Ichabod and Pocahontas and Aladdin did, and it certainly didn't move me the way my number one did. My number one starring the best Disney villain, Gaston, Beauty and the Beast. This film, let's just remember, this is the first film that won Best Picture at the Academy Award. Let me just repeat that. It didn't win Best Animation. It won Best Picture. That's how good this movie was. For a movie to be even nominated in the Best Picture category as an animation is pretty much unheard of. For it to win? Yeah, that doesn't happen. That doesn't happen. Even Lion King couldn't do that. That doesn't happen. It's not a thing. Absolutely not a thing. That's how good this film is. This film captures provincial life. It captures the wider aspirations of a young girl wanting to go on adventure, but also having a sense of family duty. It captures a wonderful, wonderful relationship between a girl and it's almost like a girl and her dog story reimagined, like a boy and his dog story reimagined. You know, she takes this feral animal and finds the good in him and brings the good out of him. And you know, I started all this off by talking about Gaston, so let's keep talking about Gaston, because what I've said to you numerous times, people have often disagreed. Gaston does not start as a villain. He's not. He starts off as a bit of a, you know, a douche. He's one of those arrogant dudes where it's like, you're arrogant. We could never be friends. Also, I kind of get why you're arrogant. Look at you. You literally look like a Greek god. Like, I get it. I don't like it, but I get it. Even listen to the song. Who does she think she is? No one says no to Gaston. That girl has tangles with the wrong man, you know? Delusions of grandeur because he's high on his own supply and he's surrounded himself by a bunch of yes men who buy into his BS. That doth not make him a villain. The point where he's a villain is when his ego gets ahead of him. It's right at the end. And what Disney do that is so clever, go back and watch the scene, and you can probably watch just the song on YouTube. It's after he's plotting to send Maurice to the insane asylum in order to manipulate Belle into marrying him. I mean, what's the worst thing he does at the beginning? He sneaks into house. I'll have Belle as my wife. Make no mistake about that. Ooh. Such an evil man. You want a woman to be your wife. Meanwhile, you've got Sleepy Hollow and Demon Horseman. Meanwhile, you've got Jafar wanting to rule the world as a sorcerer. Meanwhile, you've got Scar committing brothercide on the king, or regicide on the king. Meanwhile, you've got, I mean, look, we can go through all the villains. You've got Maleficent, who's literally trying to kill a minor. Like, there are some nasty villains in the Disney pantheon. And yet somehow a guy whose worst thing to his name is his own hubris of arrogantly thinking, I'll get her to be my wife. Ooh, you're such a bad man. And then he goes bad. He goes real bad. And watch the genius of the Disney animation in this. When he's singing that song at the end, when he's taken the mirror from Belle, and he and well, sorry, when Belle says, show me the beast, and he grabs the mirror from her and says, look, this is what we're up against. Knowing in that moment he can rally the town to his cause, not to eliminate some beast because, oh, he cares so much about the town. He's using that against the town. He wants to kill the beast because it's the one he's figured out that that's the one thing Belle loves. Even says, you care for this creature, you love this beast, right? he's realized in that moment he is powerless to get the girl that he wants. That's what pushes him over the edge. And he uses it to manipulate the town. Watch the song just before he starts singing. So it's time to take some action, boys. It's time to follow me. All the villagers start talking to each other and they animate it so that Gaston starts creeping in behind their shoulders, watching as they're talking to each other, nodding maliciously in approval that the seeds that he's planted have worked. He becomes a villain. It's such brilliant filmmaking. Like, this is the stuff you see in a Scorsese movie. Someone who starts out a bit like, you know, a bit of an arrogant douche, but goes full bad. This is elevated movie making. This is proper writing that they've done to this. This isn't just you're bad, you're written that way, we're going to make you bad. You start bad, you finish worse. This is like, you're a bit of a knob, but I wouldn't call you evil. Nope. And we're not even grading on a curve here. I'm literally putting you up against people who have committed regicide, babycide, and demon stuff. Yet you're the worst somehow. It's brilliant.
Nice. I can't argue. There's good points there. Good points being laid out there. It's
not a bad film. It won an Oscar. It's definitely not a bad film.
You seen The English Patient recently?
Sorry?
You seen The English Patient recently?
We all have days off. I remind you of the fish flubbing movie as well.
Yeah, that was the next one to come out, Wallace. But yeah,
yes, you know, and I remember very well that driving Miss Daisy beat my left foot. They definitely have some days off. There's no doubt. There's definitely some days off. Moonlight beat La La Land. They have days off.
There we are. Okay.
But until, I constantly say, until someone is able to present to me a more viable body of voters who are practicing movie makers and therefore have a more valid opinion than anyone else, because they literally do movies for a living, when you show me that body of people, I will listen. If all you can raise me is the Golden Globes and the Hollywood Foreign Press Association, should we move on to our Rushmore?
Mm-hmm.
So Lion King, Aladdin, and Beauty and the Beast automatically go in because it's joints.
Okay. Yeah.
I'm listening to your fourth.
This is a good one. You actually got me stumped because I'm not too sure. I mean, I feel like we should go classic. It feels weird that like those are our generation's ones that are in there. It feels like it should be a classic. Now, I'm just trying to look through your list. Alice in Wonderland. That was another pun.
It was. We've got our four.
Yeah, there we go. That sorted it straight away.
The rules of the non-live Rushmore have spoken.
Okay.
Shall we? Are you able to do the tapping or not?
Rhythm would be the factor behind that.
With some rhythm, my brother.
Okay.
Ladies and gentlemen, the official movie Mount Rushmore of classic Disney animated movies, in no particular order, is
Aladdin.
Our second entry is
Alice in Wonderland.
Sorry, let me just our third entry is
The Lion King.
Our final entry into the movie Mount Rushmore of classic Disney animated movies is
Beauty and the Beast.
Great stuff,
guys. Right, let's not waste any time. Head on over to @WeLoveMovies, Movie Pulse for You, fronted by good old JT. And head on over to @MovieMTRushmore. We'll be retweeting JT. So you only get one vote, and that's how you get to crown the best of the best of the best. Will it be The Lion King, Beauty and the Beast, Alice in Wonderland, or Aladdin? The choice is yours. We've voted. It gets even tougher for you.
Yep, and ooh, voice is gone. Please do make sure that you subscribe to the channel if you have not done so already. We do release new videos each and every day right here on the Silver Screen Dudes YouTube channel. Thank you once again to all of you who have helped get us to 120 followers in the last 5 weeks. Been really cool. Didn't think we'd get to 100 that quickly, given that we are a tiny channel of just two people. But we're doing what we can to keep you guys entertained. Thank you for everything you do for us. Please do continue to like and support us. And please do tune in for next week's Top 10, which will be... AJ, what is it?
I can't get to the phone to say it, and I can't remember it off the top of my
head. Just stay tuned. You'll have another Top 10 next week. We'll see you next week, guys. I'm Nico Lorel.
The one AJ, Anthony Jordan.
See ya.
See ya.